Welcome back, everybody. Sorry for the little delay. I'm not great at scheduling things, and it, you know, we all have lives. But I'm here with like the very first original co-host who hasn't been on in a long time.
Right.
No, it's Adele Buck.
Hi. Yes. And I, you know, when we sent out the spreadsheet and said, you know, sign up, and I started looking at the list of the IMDb breakdowns, I was like, oh, wow, that sounds really intriguing. because as people might know, I am a writer as well. So, you know, the idea that someone would basically rip off somebody else's story and make themselves the star of it is very intriguing, is one way of putting it.
Yeah, I know a lot of writers like put people they know or like take pieces from themselves or other things in their world. But like, yes, to be like, this is me, when you right. also know there's no way it could be the real mastermind.
Right. It's right.
Very tricky. And also, like, I like this because you were on the very first episode, and there are a lot of like lines from the first episode, sort of bastardized
yeah.
in this. So it's very fitting.
Yeah. Not so like, I noticed that too. Oh, and this is, I'm a bit of a slacker because I have actually only seen this episode once. So my recall is not going to be as great as usual, but it was only a couple nights ago. So, you know, it's not like it's not fresh in my mind.
You blew my mind when you were like, oh, I should go watch the episode. And I was like, yeah, I need to do my second and third rewatches too. And then I was like, she means for the first time.
Yes. It's been a little zooey around here lately. I don't know. It's just
life. You didn't sit there and watch all eight of them in a day and a half like I did?
No. And what the funny thing was is that we had gone past that one. And I think what happened is that we'd been watching it on streaming, and I think we, instead of pausing it, like we turned the television off and it was still quote unquote playing in the background. So the app thought that we had already watched it. And I was like, no, that we have not watched this. Like,
none of this is familiar. What's going on?
I have
on?
Zero recall of this. Zero.
Well, okay. In case other people have zero recall of it, which I don't know why they wouldn't know what we were talking about if they're listening to this podcast, here's a quick rundown. When a memoir that could only have been written by Nate surfaces, the team have to cope with their feelings of being put on or completely left off paper and make sure it doesn't get published to protect themselves and all of their past clients. So when an ousted monarch disrupts their con, Harry's in danger and they must all work with the fake Nate to fix everything.
Yes.
This is the first episode that was written by Kate Rourke, the new showrunner.
Oh, I know what, I noticed that she is now the showrunner, and that is so exciting because, you know, she's kind of like, you know, I've never met her, but I kind of feel like she's one of our own because she's also a romance writer. So yeah, exactly. So that's really cool that she did that. And I thought also that this was a really interesting way to, you know, the show has explored Sophie's grief over losing Nate before, but this was especially poignant because it's like, first of all, somebody has sort of like ripped off her late husband's brain and left her entirely out of the story. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the actress is so good that, you know, you get that weird, you know, grief, but also bewilderment. Because even though she knows it's not Nate, it can't be, that there's still that sense of like, he had to have something to do with this. And so why am I not in the picture?
Exactly. You kind of see her go through the five stages of grief again.
Right.
Thing. I mean, not in the order they're supposed to go in, which I learned recently that the five stages of grief that's just a load of bull.
Yeah, probably. As many of things like that are.
you cannot condense the human condition into like five steps.
Right. You know, oftentimes those things are developed to write books around. And I think that was probably what happened. There's the same thing with love languages, apparently, is that, you know, that was something that was developed to, you know, kind of almost astrologize people's reactions so that you have something to hang a self-help book on.
Exactly. And, you know, I love it. I love horoscopes. I love Enneagrams. Like, even if I'm at the same time think they're all fake, I'm just like, yes, no, I'm a type 7, obviously. Right. Textbook Scorpio. No.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things. It's what's interesting about it is your reaction to it. It's not the thing itself. It's like, how do you feel about the advice you get for the day, or the prediction of what your day is going to be, or the personality type that you are? So, and you know, just to bring it back to leverage. They also they're such archetypes, of course. I mean, it's right there. In the opening credits, you know, grifter, thief, hitter, hacker, mastermind, et cetera, et cetera. So they're not really boxed in like they were back in season one, because they have all cross-pollinated their skill sets, which was one of the most interesting things for me out of the first series, was how they did that. And they kind of bring it back a little bit with Brianna, because she's, of course, the greenest member of the team, but that, you know, the rest of them are sort of operating at a much higher level and much greater skill set. So they kind of don't have as much to learn. Well, I guess Harry does too. But yeah, it's just an interesting evolution. They're not trying to make the same show again, but there's so many sort of echoes and callbacks and things that worked that still work. Mm-hmm. In this and new formulation.
Yeah. And along the line of like, they are all archetypes, but they have grown past those archetypes. They recognize that too, because in a minute, when we finally start talking about the whole episode, Elliot really chafes at the idea that he's just a hitter.
Right.
That all he does is punch people and flip his hair. the touchstones of his character, but as he points out, like, he went undercover in an open air market to like uncover this, you know, smuggling ring, and then he like gets really big into a bit and later in the episode. So he's just like, I'm not just this thing, which I don't know if he would have said at the beginning of season one, you know.
Right.
So
because actually, if you think back to the very first episode, and Hardison's like, man, what do you even do? And then they have that wonderful action fight sequence, and he's like, that's what I do. So he defined himself that from the get-go.
Yeah, but now it's not enough, because it's been 15, 18 years or whatever.
Oh God, it's so weird. It's not that long, but it's been a long time.
Yeah, so he's evolved, as we all do. Okay, before we get into, you know, kind of scene by scene, this episode, because it was the season, like the mid-season finale, they had to, of course, bring Dean Devlin in to direct it. So just wanted to give him his dues. So the opening scene, which is just scene straight out of, and we see it later that it's Naveed reading it, and like, I guess it's his imagination of it. But it felt very Rashomon job.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it's just like kind of caricatures of our people. And when I started my second rewatch for this part, I was like, where's Hardison? I had like completely forgotten that Alda Sodge is not going to be in this episode.
Right.
I'm like, where's Hardison? And then it's sad all over again.
It is sad that he is not, you know,
they couldn't have gotten like just call him, like do a little Zoom call, record it, and just type it in, like he's in the earpiece somewhere,
right? Something, anything.
It wouldn't be that hard. No. Like paperwork and stuff like that, and money.
It probably having a lot to do, yes, with money and contracts and that sort of thing.
So but then it flips back and to headquarters, and Parker, Elliot and Harry are all trying to help Sophie on this very difficult day. It's her anniversary.
Right.
And Sophie wants no part of this. She just wants to go buy stuff.
Right.
Retail therapy and she'll be fine. She doesn't want whatever. I think Parker just wants to talk to her, which I was like, talk about growth.
Yeah.
Parker recognizing that you know, spending an anniversary alone is hard because it was just the anniversary of the seventh time I pushed Hardison off a building and it was pretty
Yes. I don't know why my light is going like that.
I was like, do you have a fire flickering?
This light has been flickering. I can't figure out why. It's driving me nuts. But anyway.
I just thought it was really sweet that Parker's come so far.
Mm-hmm.
Would just been like, oh, what's sad? I don't understand.
Right.
Elliot's is, you know, speaking of love languages, using his love language, cooking for people.
Yep.
Is Sophie vegan? Because he's like, I made your favorite vegan breakfast foods. And
yeah, that came out of left field for me too. So I don't know.
Yeah. And I'm just like trying to think, it doesn't mean that she's always been vegan because you can just become vegan anytime you want.
Right.
But I'm just trying to think of foods that Sophie has eaten in the past and I can't off the top of my head think of anything.
Which is interesting because I know that one of the things that John Rogers talked about was that how actors just like, they love to eat in scenes and that because it gives them something to do, especially if they're having a talky scene.
Yeah. But
they get like to have, you know, it's not like they're really eating usually because if you kept eating, you explode.
Back that continuity of what you're eating.
Yes. Right? Yes.
And that's why Chinese food is so popular.
Yes.
You can see what's in the box. You can just see playing with those chopsticks.
There's just chopsticks coming in and out. Yeah.
I've seen Sophie eat, but I can't remember like specifically if she's eaten meat, which is unnecessary to go into.
Completely. Sure. Yes.
Remember.
Somebody's probably tracked every food she has had in every episode of both series.
I know that Ellie and Hardison have talked about steak.
Yeah.
I know that she ate Italian food.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter. It's not important. She might be vegan now. This might be a later in life lifestyle change. Anyways, and then Harry comes in and he's got this obscure British series that she liked as a kid. He's like, movie marathon. She's cosseted. She doesn't want to be cosseted.
And I get that. I get that so much because, you know, that's, if something happens to me, my husband is just like beside himself if he can't do something to help. And on one level, it's very, very sweet. And on another level, it's exhausting because you sometimes end up feeling like you have to figure out something for them to do so that they're contributing. And that is emotionally draining because you're basically, you're already dealing with, you know, illness or injury or whatever, in this case, grief. And then you've got to be taking care of somebody else so that they can take care of you. It's really exhausting.
You don't have time to do list. That's so true. And it is really nice when people like that feeling of like, this is a person that I care for and I want to lessen their burden, but asking what you can do to help or like trying different things doesn't always
just
work.
Yeah, in hope, just trying stuff in hopes that you'll hit upon something at random is not very helpful either. So I get why she was just kind of like, please no, stop.
Yeah, and she even says, and don't act like you haven't been doing this from the beginning, letting me run the cons. Like, I know you can't con a con artist.
Right.
And you're like, what? mean? We couldn't possibly have done any of this without you. Like, we haven't
been
for the past 8 years, you know?
Right.
But then Brianna stops her before she actually gets to leave, and not to cosset her anymore, but because Hardison sent something over that they're all going to want to see. And far from helping, it's going to make things worse because it is the manuscript.
Right.
Galley or the Ark of Mastermind.
Yeah, that's an early galley because there's no cover on it. So it's
I've never seen a galley or an ark that looks like that. So that's real early.
That looked like it was like 8.5 by 11 in terms of the size of it. I have gotten galleys that were very early that were very plain like that. So there was like zero cover development.
Yeah,
actually, I have a copy of a galley of the Widow of Rose House before it was called the Widow of Rose House, because Diana Biller is a friend of mine. And so and it looked kind of like that, but more along the same size format that a trade paperback is, not like not looking like that. But there was something else too. There was something about the timeline. I was like, you got to be kidding me. Because it's like, it was coming, the book was coming out almost instantaneously. And I'm like, you don't even have a cover? I don't think so.
Yeah, that was,
Like, Kate, you know better. You're an author.
Like, Kate Rourke knows how the industry works. Yeah, because I've gotten unbound proofs of graphic novels. So like all the art is there, and it'll be like half of it's colored and half of it's still in black and white.
Wow. Hi, Kitty.
It's just like a sheaf of paper.
Right.
So yeah, and I framed one of the pieces of art from it.
Cool.
From Unbound Academy. Hello, say hi.
Hello, baby.
She's just giving me kisses.
She's very upset that you're not paying attention to her.
Yeah, she's like, who are you talking to that it's not yelling at me for scratching something?
Right?
Unfair. I'll yell at you later, I'm sure. So, yeah. So having it's like going to come out in 2 weeks or whatever, it doesn't have cover art or anything. Also had Naveed get it. I guess it kept popping up.
Well, if it's going to be a buzzy book, then galleys will go out early. And if you're a monarch, I suppose you can get whatever the heck you want.
I was like, do you think Naveed's on NetGalley?
Right. But no, because he got a paper copy.
Oh, that's true. I'm just thinking of like.
Sorry to your listeners for all of this publishing inside baseball, yeah, because it's probably
sorry.
Not.
We're librarians, we're writers. It's just, this is what we do.
Yes.
But yeah, and Naveen's like, he's not anywhere cool. He's in his warehouse in the south of France. Anyways, where were we? So yeah, this is the manuscript that has everything. It's got all these, not everything's completely accurate,
right?
But it has lots of details of their past jobs. It has tons of stuff about them. And we touched on all that earlier. Elliot's upset that he's just here. Parker is angry that she's legendary.
Right. Which is frankly, a classic Parker style response.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very classic. You know, it's like.
Earlier she was like, I'm Parker. I'm the best, you know?
Right.
But now she's like, people shouldn't know who I am. That's not right.
Yeah.
I'm a legend. And Sophie's not in it at all.
In it at all, yeah.
I love Harry going over to try to talk to her about it. And he says, you know, it's got to be hard. I know, like, on your wedding anniversary. She's like, oh no, don't get it twisted. This was not our wedding anniversary. Right. This was the time we met when we shot each other.
Right. Which of course there was a flashback scene in episode one, season one, of that event actually happening.
Yeah. Which is so great. The way that they both reacted to being shot in the arm for the show.
What?
Not how they would have reacted. There would be screaming.
Yeah.
You shot me.
She's miffed.
And she has this beautiful line where she says, do you know the feeling of seeing someone and thinking it's the person you want most to see in the entire world, and then they turn around and it's not them?
Yeah.
And she's like, this is how this book makes me feel. And you're just like,
yeah. I have felt that. Yes. Yes.
Oh, or like, and not even like if you see someone, but you like smell something that like brings that person back, or like.
Oh God. Yeah. Every once in a while, my late grandmother wore a very distinctive perfume, I don't even know if it's still made now, but every once in a great while, I'll smell something, or I'll smell it. Maybe it's just even an element from it or something like that. And it just viscerally comes back to me that she's gone. And yeah, that's totally a thing.
Yeah. It's wild what triggers those feelings. Mm-hmm. Like I'll just feel a certain amount of stress or anxiety, and I'll think of my grandmother. Like if I'm like, oh, I'm throwing a dinner party and people are coming over and I'm scrambling to get everything ready, I'm like, oh my gosh. It's just like, oh, my grandma Cookie would be so proud right now. She would love that I'm doing this.
Right.
And then you're just like, I need to lay down.
Yep.
I need to go down for a little. I don't have time for this right now.
Yes. I've got to dry my nails.
It's fine. Everybody's about to be here.
Yes, I'm just going to flap my hands in front of my face because that always stops people from crying. Why do we do that?
Your eyes water more, but okay.
Yeah.
Brianna is like, I just want to know if all this stuff about my brother is true. Parker and Elliot like look at each other and she's like, what's on 42 is true. And he's like, it's not. Which means like side eye emoji, like what was on page 42? Parker's proud of and Elliot is not. Like
I thought it was kind of a reference to the OT3.
I totally did too. And yeah. But that's always where my head goes, you know.
Well, John Rogers says that's canon, so.
I know. Which they tried to also mess with us in the second part of the season, so. But I'm still holding strong. Have you finished the second half?
Mm-mm.
Okay, well.
We had so many things to watch. And it's funny because during the, you know, we're still in the pandemic, but when the pandemic was raging much harder, and I was working from home. My husband was working from home. I developed that this thing where some evenings I just couldn't stand to watch narrative media. I really wanted to watch like something like Dancing with the Stars or Great British Baking Show or something that, while there is something of a narrative, it's very, very thin because mm-hmm. I just did not have the brain cells to. I couldn't sort of rally the brain cells in order to follow something that was narratively even the slightest bit complex. So we still kind of, although I'm not that bad with it anymore, we still alternate a lot with other types of things going on. And so it's, you know, we've gone full streaming. So it's kind of like, it's not like we log into the TiVo and say, oh, here's what we have next. We have to pop around to various other apps and figure out like what we're in the mood for and what we have new episodes of. And it's, yeah. So,
yeah. No, that's hard. And I totally get that. Like I watched an entire season of Love Island in 1 week. And that is a series you do not need a brain cell for it.
I've never seen that.
No, and then yeah, I've gotten really into this dance competition show from China where the episodes okay. are like 3 hours long.
Oh my god.
It's so great because it's just like dancing and you like love all the dancers and the captains who are the judges, and yeah, you're completely devoted to it, but you don't have to track
a story.
You just have to read subtitles. Like
yeah.
It's nice because then you're not doom scrolling on your phone. You have right. to understand what they're saying.
Right.
But yeah, no, I totally get it. But the second half of the season is also excellent. So it's
yes, waiting excellent. For you to get to it. I've seen a couple of episodes of it because as I said, we just kind of like must have skipped over a few. So we're going to have to backtrack. Luckily that the entire arc of the season doesn't seem to be that complete. The various shows seem to be fairly, you know, standalone in terms of their storylines.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to be a sort of a meta arc in this particular season.
Yes.
Or much of one. Yet.
Well, you know, it's not all going to be at Monsters of the Week, but.
Right.
Yeah. 90% of it. Anyways, I don't want to spoil anything for you. OT3 gets challenged a little bit, but I can still explain it.
Okay.
And I feel it ends happily in OT3 land again.
Okay, then good.
Just so you're prepared. Okay. Anyway, so now we are going to start our con. Brianna has tried to find out stuff about this mastermind person, which is what he goes as his alias.
Which is so...
Which is really sad you didn't choose that as an alias.
It's like, oh... And then at the same time, it's so cringe. It's just.
It's so cringe. And the picture of him is just kind of like this silhouette, which reverse image searched. And I'm sure she like played with it in Photoshop to see if she could get anything can't find anything on this guy. He's a complete mystery. He's not on any of the regular sites, except that his publishing company has made a website for him where you can contact them and schedule publicity, like promotional.
Right.
For media. I'm like, what?
Enter one of my favorite types of scenes from this show is where like Elliot shows up and it's sort of like, you got to get out of here or you're all going to die. So they can take over this television studio.
It's so good. Because, and they're like, it's a contagion. It's an outbreak. Like, we got to get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. And, so, and
yeah, they want to scare him into triggering the kill clause in his contract.
Right.
To make them not publish it so they can, you know, save them. She's like, oh, we can contact him, make an appointment. We can lure him to a, like a obscure location, and then we can all stab him with forks so none of us can be held accountable. Like a typical Murder on the Orient Express.
The Orient Express, yeah.
Sorry to if I spoiled the that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, sorry if we spoiled a 70-year-old murder mystery. Yeah.
The statute of limitations is up on that. It's had several
occasions. Yes. Once Kenneth Branagh wears funny facial hair and makes a movie of it, you're done, okay?
Branagh, like, it's too much. That mustache was very upsetting to me.
I didn't ever actually see the movie. I kind of wanted to just because the cast was so amazing. It's like, you know, especially you put Leslie Odom Jr. in anything and I'm like, where do I sign up?
Yeah, and like Penelope Cruz and... Mm-hmm. As well as everybody who's in that movie. Yeah, it was good. I mean, Kenneth Branagh will never be my Poirot, but...
No.
Okay?
But yes. Have you ever... sorry, this is a little far afield, but have you ever heard David Suchet narrating Agatha Christie?
No.
He's a really good narrator. And here's the thing about David Suchet, because I know I've seen him in other stuff, but mostly I haven't sort of... Poirot in my head. And of course, he's got this little high-pitched voice that is, you know, Belgian accent. The man has like a basso profundo, regular speaking voice. So he's got this like beautiful sort of bassoon of a voice as he's doing the regular narration. And then he kicks into the dialogue with Poirot. And it's just like, holy bananas, this is so much fun. I can't stand it.
Oh, I'm going to have to look that up. That's great.
Yeah.
Have you seen the, like, let's just keep going on this.
Sure, thing. Why not? It's your show, lady.
No, right? You can fast forward. Sorry, listeners, if you are not interested. Touché Hours. He did a little documentary on PBS where he, like, took you on a tour of the Orient Express. And so you like went through the cabins and he like gave the history and then they like traveled like along.
I have not seen this.
Oh my God, he's so gorgeous. And he speaks in his actual, you know, voice. And so you're just like, what? But he's like, he's dressed a little more casually, but then like sometimes he'll be dressed up like Poirot and you're just like, what's happening? Yep. But it's like, I want to go on the Orient Express so bad. So bad. That's my 50th birthday present to myself.
Okay.
It's going to take me that long to save up to go. Anybody welcome to join me? We're going November of whatever year it is, I turn 50.
Okay.
All right. So let's go. We're going to go steal our lives back, as Sophie says. She's this man is not Nate Ford. How dare you? So, like we were saying, they steal a TV studio by coming in hazmat suits, basically. And Elliot's yelling, but Harry's really into it as well.
Yeah.
And he's got the like bugs in a plastic bag. It's so great. And then Brianna's ready and she's like a PA and she is greeting Mastermind as he comes out. And he's got the like fedora bowler hat situation. He's looking down and then he like takes it off, tosses it into the car, is not bringing it with him, and like looks up and it's just the like doofiest looking man.
Just Joe Ordinary. Absolutely ordinary.
A man who looks like his name is Joey Slotnick. because it is.
Yeah.
The actor.
Well, the thing is too, is like, recall that, you know, Nate was forever wearing very different hats, literally wearing different hats when he was on the show. And I don't know if this is the case, but of course, Brianna's, you know, smacking gum as Nate did frequently, especially when he was sort of in one of those fast talking character modes.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the name of that one skeezy lawyer he plays.
Oh God, yeah. It's just
give me something or other. Yeah. That's true. But she does the like great smacking the gum vocal fry of like, oh, we're so happy to have you on our
have you?
Yeah. Like, through. Did you get the questions ahead of time? Oh no? Well, if we email them to you, can I see your phone?
Right.
Hands for his cell phone. Which she promptly clones.
Of course.
But as they're going into the studio, Naveed, who we don't know is Naveed at this point, walks up and is like, hey, can I have a chat with him? And she's like, no. Closes the door. No,
bye.
No guests. And he says he's like, represents foreign something. I can't think of the word. Foreign interests, because I think he'd be a splash overseas. And right. She's like, yeah, no, that's not weird. Bye. And she also calls him a schmo. She's like, does this guy sound like a schmo to any of you? Because he gets one of the stories wrong. She's explaining how the show's going to go. And he's like, oh yeah, it's just like when we faked that movie in Sarajevo. And she's like, Serbia.
Right. Yeah.
I know that better than you.
Exactly. So something's off here.
Parker, I didn't catch this the first two times I watched it. I think I was focusing on the hair flip that happens in a second, but Parker's still up for stabbing this man.
She's right.
Like, I think I'll do it. And Elliot's like, I mean, it's a valid plan B. I'd be okay with that. For a second, you get that look and you think he's going to just be like, no, get serious. And he's like, no, I could go for that. That'd be fine.
Right.
And he does the hair flip and then gets really upset. And she's like, well, you could still be legendary. Like, he's like, I should be the legendary one. I just love bickering. It's so fun.
Yes. And they always have given good bicker. And, you know, they especially, you know, so much of Elliot's persona is just like the grumpy one anyway. So, you know, it's such a go-to moment to have him get hacked off it. Usually it's, you know, Parker or Hardison. Less so with Brianna, I'm seeing. And yeah. I wonder if that has something to do with her youth and experience and that it would look pretty, it wouldn't have the same kind of, she doesn't have the same kind of history with him that the others do, and it might look more like bullying.
Yeah, I mean, but I could see it coming from like she's like the little sister who like mm-hmm. is annoying, but he can't react the same way. Like they can't have the banter the same way,
right?
Because I think it would come across as mean.
Yeah,
and I think at this point she looks up to him too much to be comfortable to try to like poke fun at him, because she's still just like, oh my God, I got to watch Elliot fight in real life. Like, oh, this is awesome.
Right.
Please, you know. So, yeah, I wonder if we'll see more of that as their like relationships grow.
Mm-hmm.
But it is always, because we do need a little more bickering with Elliot because we don't have Hardison. So at least Parker's there.
Yeah. I know, Kitty.
Say hi.
Kitty. Stripey kitty. Hello, precious.
My shy one too. But it's gotten chilly here, like chilly for Texas.
Right.
Like, oh my gosh, I want your body warmth. I will come lay on you.
I was cuddled up with Pickle and Milo earlier. And so I'm sort of like packed with cats.
Nice, little space heaters. But then you can't move.
No, that's the rule.
Okay, so now we have the entrance of Sophie. in this amazing character with this like, broad New Orleans accent, and she just drags this man.
Yes.
He comes out, she calls him Mr. Mastermind. Mastermind. And first he gets the catchphrase wrong, you know, powerful people take what they want, we steal it back for you, we provide. And everyone's like, leaning in, yeah. Leaning in. And he's like, an advantage. And they're like, oh, yeah.
No. You totally blew it. Yeah.
Oh, this is awful. And then in the background, Parker is like miming, stabbing him again. Also, this part in a second, when they keep going with the con, the fact that they're in the room, but behind cameras, mm-hmm. is such a great, I don't know, like not commentary, but you know, he's not going to notice these people just dressed in black doing their jobs. So later, when they just throw something else on top of their black clothes,
right.
and have a persona, he doesn't even think, I saw you a minute ago.
Right. Because they're basically their furniture.
Yeah. And not to say like he's classist or anything and isn't going to notice people who are beneath him, but he's overwhelmed and, mm-hmm. you know, he's never done this before. And now he's having this crisis on camera because Sophie is just pointing out all of the horrible things that are about to happen to him. But just, it's such an interesting thing about human psychology. Like you think mm-hmm. about how easily somebody could do that to you or you could do that to somebody else.
Yeah. Well, misdirection is one of those things where, you know, you really, human beings who are very bad at assessing what they're good at will think, oh, I wouldn't get caught out by that. And, you know, but boy, howdy, human beings are wired for patterns mm-hmm. and they're, you know, there's only so much information you can take in at a given point. So we're really good at kind of throwing up little blocks, like, you know, it's basically saying that's not important. I'm not going to pay attention to that without even knowing that we're doing it. I mean, there a bunch of years ago, might've been like 15 years ago, the Folger Shakespeare Theater here in DC did a production of Macbeth, and they did it. It was co-directed by Aaron Posner, who's the artistic director at the Folger, and Teller, the stage magician.
Oh, like, so
like as in Penn and Teller. Yeah. And so, and they did like incredible stage magic. I mean, they, you know, that in the hand washing scene, Lady Macbeth was dripping with blood and you couldn't tell where it was coming from. Yeah, it was amazing. It was phenomenal. But there was this one moment where during the banqueting scene where, you know, they all kind of raise a toast to Macbeth. And so you're focused in on Macbeth. And then a couple of guys moved aside and Banquo's ghost is sitting there, right? And then a few minutes later, they repeated that blocking. And I was like, he's going to be back there again. And he came from like the totally other side of the stage. So it was one of those where like I could see it happening in my own brain. I was succumbing to the pattern mm-hmm. of the blocking and expecting it to repeat. And of course, Teller is no fool. And he's like, I'm going to make these people focus on this part of the stage and the guy's going to come from over there.
That's good.
Yeah.
The human brain is amazing and it's also so fallible. Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I love it. It's terrifying though.
Super yeah. Terrifying. Oh yeah. Super terrifying.
Like when it's used for fun in theater and stage, right. I'm all for it. But yeah. So Sophie is like, oh, you're so brave to have written this book. And he says, oh no, I'm brave to have done all the stuff in it. She's like, no, no, no. What I mean,
yeah,
nobody knows, but I'm sure you're ready for that. I'm sure you have a team of like cyber, you know, analysts or whatever to keep you safe online. And I'm sure, you know, that you have law enforcement
mm-hmm.
colleagues that are okay that you made them all look stupid and
yeah, right.
You'll be fine. And you can yeah. see this, like Joey Slotnick is a pretty great actor because he just looks ashen. It's
yeah.
not really open. He's just like, you just see him going, oh, oh no.
Yeah. Oh, that's no good.
Oh. And all the scenarios are popping up in his head. And then in a second, they're all going to start happening right away.
Right.
So fast, because he's still so freaked out, but he's not going to question. This shouldn't have happened this quickly.
Right, right. This is a strange Russian lady showing up out of nowhere.
Yeah, his phone packed, so he's, you know, even more like freaked out about that. He gets a blackmail note. Then the Stolichnaya comes down the stairs, named for the vodka brand, and tells him that she wants him to wear a wire and to get in touch with some oligarchs. But he's like, I have to visit the little boys' room. Right. Are we talking about oligarchs? And then he tries to run away, and then Elliot shows up in a prison jumpsuit and says that he wants to make him like miserable and is going to give him a head start. And then he's like, one. Yeah, you got to run, man.
How this is playing.
So great. And he runs outside just like right into the hands of Harry, who says that he's his lawyer, was supposed to be, but he got fired because he said all this stuff was going to happen. And he says, oh, well, you could just do your kill clause and not publish the book. And he's like, yeah. Can I borrow your phone? Because I can't get into mine. And then they both get totally used every day by mercenaries, I'm sure.
Tranquilizer darts, yeah.
Tranquilizer darted, you know?
Yeah.
And it's so cute because he goes, oh, you have something on your neck.
Yes.
And then he's like, oh, and he gets one too.
Oops.
But as this is happening, they're watching on the feed, but then something blocks the feed. And it must be pretty powerful because it blocks an entire TV station's feed, which is pretty powerful. And by the time they get outside, he's gone. But Brianna has footage of the guy that she saw earlier. And Elliot's like, that little tiny pin, that's the flag of Zephyr. It's a very distinct flag.
Extreme flag.
And they're like, oh, why would a like Middle Eastern dictatorship care about this guy? And Brianna is like, oh, actually they're not a dictatorship. They like overthrew the monarchy or whatever recently. And that's sort of just like dropped in the background because they're all trying to figure out where he's going, because the direction he's going, there's nothing big except there's an airfield. So they realize he must be going somewhere. So they have to track him, and they're going to get there late because they'll have to catch up.
Right.
And then Mastermind wakes up in a limo in the south of France.
As one does.
At least once in our life. Oh, do you have a cat?
Yes, Lexi is. Well, she kind of comes in and looks at me like, because she doesn't know about daylight savings time and changes. And so right now she's like, mother, dinner is 15 minutes late.
I don't know if you're aware, but I must be fed.
Yes.
And you're like, you can wait.
She's lifting up her little paw and like tapping her little wrist with her other paw.
Excuse me.
Yes. Hello.
I have a reservation.
I'm surprised she didn't come and scream at me. She does that a lot.
I love a screaming cat.
Yes. Well, I do Pilates in here most days, and it's just, I get fully screamed at and licked because it's very exciting for a person to be on the floor.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, you're going to do some yoga? Okay. Hi.
Hi. Yes.
You do downward dog. Like, no, I got to get up in a second.
Let me lick your upper arm. Did you know you're ticklish there? Now you do.
Oh, they just love us.
They do.
So the mastermind wakes up in the south of France, which honestly, that'd be great. Not to be drugged and taken to the south of France against my will, but
if one must be kidnapped, it is a location that is more congenial to be kidnapped to.
Exactly. And if they pull up to this estate, which as somebody who lives on the Gulf Coast of the United States, I was like, do they have magnolias and crepe myrtles in? Right.
No.
I did like some very superficial research. And the magnolia tree, surprise, surprise, is not native to France. It's native to Asia and to the United States. It was named for a Frenchman, though. So the guy's name
okay.
was Mignol, I guess, a botanist. But yeah, no, that they're obviously very much still in New Orleans.
Right.
We're filming this during a pandemic. And also, you can't just pair off to the south of France as much as
everyone. Yeah, especially when you're, you know, sort of a basic streaming service production. I don't think there's really the budget to take the entire cast and crew to the south of France so that they can film half an episode.
I would like to know what building they use, because it's very pretty.
Yeah, it looks like it's probably some sort of stately home or you know, mansion of some kind. Or
sadly, probably like a former plantation.
Probably.
But in Leverage universe, it is the former home of some comtesse and has been donated to become like the world's most secure private museum. And King Navid, who gives a couple of recitals and then makes a joke about it goes on for 5 minutes, 3 or 5 minutes, which I think in the Leverage after show podcast, they said is a Game of Thrones reference. It only watched 2 episodes of Game of Thrones. So
we stopped watching Game of Thrones in like season 2 or 3, I think. So I do not recall. And
yeah. So if it is, that's a little reference for the people who are
okay.
It's just a funny little line. And he wants Mastermind to steal this prized possession from his country, the Zephyr Scarab, which is the one physical asset that his ex-wife Liliana got in the divorce. And he like takes Mastermind like through and he's like, you have guys with guns, why can't you just right. Yeah, I'd love to shoot this place up with Uzis, but I can't deal with the political fallout. Which fair. So he needs him during this party that his wife ex-wife is throwing to like use his special Mastermind skills and grab the scarab. And I don't think this man did very close reading of this manuscript, because it is obvious that the Mastermind plans things and has a crew to help him.
And needs a team, yes.
And the only guy that he has with him is the lawyer, who he says, if you don't do this, the lawyer and you will die. And then the Mastermind, which I think is very sweet, is like, that man, I don't know that guy. Please don't hurt him. He has nothing to do with me. Let him go. Which I think is very naive and very sweet.
Yes.
And so does Navid. He's like, that was a really good job. Like, your acting was great. Your voice quavered. But I've read your book.
Right.
I know. You're stone cold. I just thought it was really sweet. But he's like, no, just, I don't know that guy. Please don't hurt him.
Please don't hurt a complete stranger.
Yeah. And then Navid just, like, leaves. And I don't know. Joey Slotnick, he looks so stressed for a minute that I was like, yeah, if I suddenly plop down here, like, here's what you have to do, I'd be like, oh shit, oh gosh. But luckily Sophie shows up and she's like, well, aren't you in a pickle? Which is from the trailer and is so good to hear, like, happen. And then Elliot shows up too and he's like, you, oh my gosh. We find out that Elliot's really grumpy because they flew into Paris, I guess, and then drove one of the food trucks down from Paris. And now the food truck has French words on the side, even though it looks exactly like all the other food
trucks. Exactly like the other. And so why do they have a food truck in Paris?
So in the first one, the first episode, they established that he has food trucks all over the world. And they're
okay,
like,
I missed that.
Like mini Lucille's. And Parker calls them his meat wagons. So yeah, she's like, so Hardison does a lot of this stuff, you know, from our home base, and then Elliot and I fly around the world helping out the different international Leverage teams, and Elliot keeps track of his meat wagons. And he hires like veterans who are trying to get back out into the working world, and of course he sources everything locally, which we find out later, and organically, of course. So they're just like little sort of like little safe houses or little, gosh, what does Sherlock Holmes call them?
Bolt holes.
Bolt holes. Thank you. Oh my gosh.
You're welcome.
Sorry to my shirt. I'm wearing a Sherlock Holmes shirt, everybody. Yeah, little bolt holes around.
Right.
Because they are little mini Lucilles. And apparently they all come packed with wardrobes because we're able to all change our clothes. And
a million ways. Yes.
I don't know how they can also be pizza bands, but I don't care.
It's the TARDIS in there. That's, yeah.
So, yeah, but Elliot's grumpy because he drove all night to get to the south of France in this slow moving pizza van, food truck. And then Mastermind is realizing, mostly because Brianna's like, that's Elliot. You don't want to mess up, you know, upset Elliot. He's realizing, oh my gosh, you're the hitter. You're the hacker. And he's like, I thought you were a
guy. Yes.
And then Sophie's like, hello, hello. And he's just like, yeah, okay. He doesn't even blink at her, but it turns out he's an accountant, and Elliot gets really upset because he's like, you're not the accountant. I've met the accountant.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, not the accountant, an accountant. And we find out he was a forensic accountant for IYS.
Right.
And he knew Nate because he was his forensic accountant. And I like that they're kind of peeling back these layers. Like, yeah, Nate got to do all the exciting stuff and he did a lot of work to go track down these things or like find the fraud, but it was the desk people who are, you know, looking into all the shell corporations and like figuring right. out how these.
Well, it's like, it's the classic statement. It's like getting Al Capone for tax evasion. You know,
Yeah. If
you follow the money, that is where, you know, that's how you will break those kind of cases.
Yeah. And apparently Nate knew all this and appreciated it. So much so that he was the only person these guys liked at IYS because all of the rest of the, you know, agents are just jerks. I mean, we've met
Sterling.
Yeah. And if Sterling and Nate are the best of the best, like, man, that's that cookie cutter like prototype. Everybody else must be just insufferable.
Yeah.
But he's also like, he was so nice and he remembered all of our birthdays and he would always come down and chat with us. And Elliot and Sophie are like, Nate?
Right.
The guy who would talk to you really slowly like you were an idiot. Yeah. But like, he didn't disagree with any of the stuff they said about him.
Mm-hmm.
He was just like, yeah, he was wonderful, which again tells you how they were treated by everybody else. If somebody right. who was me but just gave them a modicum of respect and
mm-hmm.
they're like, yeah, no, he was an asshole, but he was great. You're just like, man, people must be so mean to you.
Right.
Any more so, you'll take it. And he also admits, he's like, I'm boring. Like, this is a thing that I know about myself.
Mm-hmm. He owns it.
Little flashbacks of him on dates and women falling asleep. Always talking.
Yes.
Poor man. But then when he starts telling stories that Nate has told him, then they're really excited and they think that he's done these things. And but then Parker pipes up and they give him a little earpiece so he can hear her. He's like, she says, yeah, but all of the stories in the book were from after he left IYS. Like, how did you know any of that?
Right.
He says, when Nate left, they saw him as a threat and they tracked him. And then he also ran into him at a bar and they like caught him.
Yeah, because of course he ran into Nate at a bar.
Of course. Nobody's gonna question that.
No.
So Elliot's like, okay, so he's not a mastermind or a criminal. He's just an accountant with a really good memory. Because we also find out that he got let go from IYS and he needed money. So he wrote this book. And so it was nothing like vengeful. It wasn't anything he did to hurt anybody. He just was like, I just needed to make my, you know, pay my rent, pay my bills. So but again, nothing about Sophie. Like, he doesn't know who she is at all.
Nope.
And So now he needs their help. He's like, I have to steal the scarab. And Sophie's like, no, I'm not helping you. Absolutely not. We're breaking Harry out of this warehouse and then we're out of here. But Brianna gives him some info. So King Navid, we know that he's been ousted and that the country took most of his physical assets. And Parker's like, yeah, she looks around and she like doesn't eyeball, like doesn't like give an estimate. She like has a specific number of the worth of the things in this warehouse, even when things are all crated up. Just, it, you know what? It's legendary.
Exactly. I mean.
And the only like physical asset they haven't taken is the scarab because it does not belong to him anymore. So he's going to need that $200 million that it's worth to pay for, wait for it, the mercenary army that he has poised at the borders.
Borders, yeah.
Like they're ready and just waiting for this paycheck to pass to go in and like take over in this bloody war and start, as Sophie says, this reign of terror.
Go from coup to coup.
So horrible. So of course this means a change of plans and Parker immediately like re-tightens, I guess they're, we don't see them at all, but either a zip tie or handcuffs, Harry. And she tightens them much tighter than they were before.
Right.
And then she shoves her taser down his pants.
Yes. As one does.
She asks him to loosen his belt after she's tightened up his hands behind his back. I'm like, that's not how that works. And then he's like, please don't put a taser in my pants. And she's like, don't lose my favorite taser.
Yeah. I mean, if a girl has a favorite taser, you know. It's...
You know, we all form attachments and Parker loves it. So now our problem is that, as stated before, this museum is like the most secure private museum in like the world because to keep its historic status, all of the security stuff has to be like embedded in the walls. So it's not easily hacked into and right. Everything's off the grid. Nothing's run by Wi-Fi. None of the security stuff is run by Wi-Fi anyways. So as Sophie says, all we have to do is distract an entire, oh, and there's a party going on, right?
That's of course. Yeah.
So all we have to do is distract an entire party, keep the guards from watching the unhackable cameras, cross an uncrossable floor because the room that the scarab is in is pressure sensitive. And the case that the scarab is in is filled with helium because it's non-corrosive. And also if there are sensors that'll go off if it's tampered with, and get the scarab out of the pressurized case and then blend back into the crowd of the party. Oh, and save our Mr. Wilson. So. Easy sure. Peasy.
Random Tuesday.
Right? So Sophie needs to get down to the basement to distract the guards because that's where Brianna has realized they are. And Elliot's going to watch the perimeter and Parker's going to get the scarab. So, you know, it is a lot of stuff that needs to be done, but they've, you know, winnowed it down to the very specific important things.
Right.
And the mastermind needs to visibly be there so that Navid thinks that he's in on this con. And as they're walking up, he's like, why am I, everybody else changed? Like, why am I still in my clothes? She has to give him like a quick masterclass on being a, you know, a con artist. Like, hey, this is your first grift. So you need to stay as close to your real identity as possible. So we're going to keep you an insurance agent. And she like talks about it. And he's like, wow, they're really training you very well.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
And like, he doesn't mean to sound condescending. Like he does mean to genuinely praise her because he doesn't know who she is, but she's like, right. Oh no.
Okay. It's like,
you in your place.
Yeah.
And she's like, you don't even know who I am. I'm Sophie. And so, you know, she's like, you don't know who I was to Nate. Like I was his wife. I was literally his partner in crime.
Mm-hmm.
I was the person who yelled at him when he loaded the dishwasher wrong. And I'm the woman who led him on a merry chase across four continents over stolen Monets. Like, how could you not know who I was? And he doesn't know what to say to this. Which I don't know, what would you say to them? How do you?
I would be speechless too, absolutely. Because, you know, to know, you know, to think that you knew those stories so well and you realize that a crucial component of them, a crucial human component of them had not been passed on, that, you know, that would have to be very disorienting.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's not a cruel man. So
no.
Her upsetness, or her upsetness, is that a word? Her upset and how upset she is about this, like, really, like, makes him feel horrible. And also now he's realizing that he's put all these people's secrets out there. So on top of that, he's like, oh, and now I've, like, hurt you emotionally.
The right. People in
the kingdom have also hurt you emotionally because you're a widow. Like, Nate is dead. Because yeah. I assume he knows that Nate is dead. He's got to. He doesn't ever ask about him, so he must know.
Right.
He also mentions a little bit before she goes off on him that it's ironic because IYS actually insures the Zephyr Scarab. And, oh, there's a funny story, blah, blah, blah. She filled out the wrong form because you'd actually want to amortize or whatever. It's so boring that, like, Brianna's falling asleep. And you're like, oh, he is really boring. What a great way to illustrate this.
Yeah. No. But that's, you know, speaking as, you know, someone who is, you know, I am a librarian, but I'm also a lawyer. And oh my God, you know, those kinds of things totally exist where, you know, you filled out the wrong form and all of a sudden everything's in the crapper.
Oh, I hate that. I don't like that at all. And it all is like, I'm with Brianna. Like, it all sounds so boring that I would just be like, yes, whatever. Like, let me just.
Exactly.
So dangerous. Yeah. So dangerous. But okay, so Sophie's going in as an old alias, as Charlotte Prentice, Duchess of Hanover.
We have yes.
The King George job, right?
I don't think so, no. And that, you know, there is some speculation based on the older woman that's actually her real identity.
Yeah. Which is very, whoo.
Yeah.
And she has brought in her insurance agent, Mr. Crow, because they want to check out the museum's security because she has some of the jewels of the Comtesse who lived in this manor house. But the museum is desperate for her to loan them to them, but they need to check that everything's secure. And Liliana's like, well, my jewels are kept here. And she's like, oh, I know, they're adorable.
Yes. I was a brilliant piece of condescension. Yes. So cute.
They're so cute. Precious. And then they just, like, waltz in and she's just, oh, okay. Everybody else's, you know, invitations are being checked and she's greeting them. Charlotte Prentice just swans in.
Yes.
Very good. The actress who plays Liliana, very beautiful. Her name is mm-hmm. Rasha Balmiri. And I just think it's really interesting that I want to know more about her character because, you know, she was married to this Middle Eastern dictator, but her last name, I guess she changed it back maybe to her maiden name. Her last name is Ingolstadt, which is very like Swiss or German or Austrian or something. And I'm like, you don't look like an Ingolstadt. I mean, you might be, but I don't know. I want to know more
of the Kuwaiti Ingolstadts.
Maybe, you know, there were some more. Did she get married again? And now, I don't know, but the way that she acts on a little bit, not the way a married lady acts, but maybe if you're very rich, it is. So back in the warehouse, Harry's watching this mercenary who later we learn that his name is Drago. Amazing. is putting together a shopping list for like weapons and ammunition. And he starts like planting these little seeds of doubt that will grow and be fertilized as we go. And Parker back at the museum is stealing balloons, as one does, mm-hmm. and then pretending that she is the event designer and right. yelled for French waitress in a German accent.
Basically goes off in her, sort of her little Bjork-esque personality from, you know, just kind of.
Between Vimsy and, oh, what was the other one? I can look it up. It's a good line. There must be a balance between Vimsy and history. Balance! And the poor waitress is like, whatever.
Yeah, like, I'm just a waitress. I don't do any of this.
I'm only the catering. And so she like lets her go and she's skipping around with these balloons. And she ties one around the door of the room where the scarab is. And she like peeks in and she's like, okay, there are a lot. I've got two guards. I've got a ton of people. So we need to clear this place out. And Sophie's like, okay, Elliot, you've got this. And the mastermind is like, wait, what? The hitter? He can't do that. And Elliot's like, I'm not just a hitter.
Yeah.
I'm gonna show you. So he goes, and then Elliot's whole thing is so over the top. It is so amazing because he goes up behind Liliana and he's like, I'm going to talk to you privately.
She's like, okay.
Everybody else here is in formal wear and this man is just in all black, like black jeans and combat boots. And she follows him to a second location. And he just keeps like nodding his head and like mysteriously like moving out of frame. And so she follows him to this grotto and he tells her that his name is Frank Farmer, which as a lot of people may know is the name of Kevin Costner's character in The Bodyguard. he works for the CIA and they've been tracking her ex-husband, Naveed. Gosh, why can't I say his name today? And he's landed in the south of France and his boss has told him to get out of there. But he couldn't after he saw her picture. So right. Make sure that she's safe because Naveed is coming to kill her. And she's like, oh, okay. I have my own security. And like then one of her security guards comes and Elliot knocks him out and like pulls this knife out of nowhere. And he's like, hey, the knife. He's already bought out by her ex. And she's like, oh my gosh.
Oops. Like, what are you-
But also like he's like talking really close about how beautiful right. she is and how he can't help himself. And she's like, oh.
Right. You know, because that's the thing. I mean, Christian Cain is a very, very good looking man.
Yeah. And yeah. And she just like did not realize she was going to walk right into like a thriller romance plot line.
Right. Today.
And she's like, okay, let's go.
She's like, I'm in a Suze Brockman book. Let's go. Exactly.
And he tells her, so your security is no good. You need to gather all of the aristocracy and all of the diplomats and everybody important that you have all and like have them surround you because then you'll be safe because they can't do anything with all these people who have their own, you know, security and stuff. And if anything happens to them, it's bad news bears. So that clears everybody out of the museum so that Parker can start her part of the heist. And she's like, are you gonna come with me? And he's like, no, but I'll be bye. So good. And she's like, he leaves and she's like, and she's always like straightening her dress a little.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good. Now, Sophie's trying to get down to the security room and the mastermind is trying to apologize to her and she's not having any of it. And she basically like tells him, this is what is gonna happen. I'm gonna go downstairs and do the job that you can't do. But then I'm gonna need you to stand guard. Then I'm gonna need you to cancel the publication of your book and then I'm gonna need you to disappear. I need you to not exist ever again in my vicinity. And he's just like, okay, I'll keep guard. She's intimidating.
Yes.
But just as she's about to go in, Liliana comes waltzing up and she's like, oh, you know, Lady Prentice, we have to go into the ballroom or whatever. And she grabs her and she grabs Elliot. And she's like, I know I'll be safe with you, you by my side. And Elliot's like, oh no. And they have to leave. So Mastermind's just standing there because she does not acknowledge this man at all.
No, again, furniture.
Exactly. And she just leaves him there. And so what are we going to do? It flips here back to the warehouse where Harry is continuing. I wrote he's like continuing to radicalize. He doesn't really radicalize. He just gets them to set up an IRA.
That's right.
To have money, because he's like, are you sure he can pay you? Because it only looks like there's $1.2 million for the stuff here. And he's like, yeah, no, we know he has 10 million in this Swiss bank account. We know we're going to get 200 million from this sale of the scarab. And he's like, are you sure? And he's like, yeah, no, I have the account right here. And he's like, oh, let's set up an IRA so that it'll just, you know, automatically go in like monthly or something. And then it kind of leaves there and you're like, oh.
Mercenaries thinking about retirement.
And he's like rolled over. I don't know if he's still cuffed. He's just sitting with the laptop with his man, with Drago. So we need Mastermind to get down into the security room. And he's like, I don't know. Like, I'm not like you guys. I don't have a special power. Because he says earlier that Nate told him and the other accountants that everybody has a special power. They just need to figure out his. And then Nate left. And he was like, and then he left before we could figure mine out. And you're kind of like, that's sad. But he's like, yeah, I don't have a special power. I'm so boring that I make people fall asleep. And then everyone's like, oh,
that's a special power.
Yeah. So he goes down there and Brianna helps by turning the temperature up a little. So it's post lunchtime nap temperature. Thanks. Which is very nice. Also Liliana brings Elliot and Sophie into the party and she's like, oh, Lady Charlotte, like you must meet this inspector from Interpol. And then she's like standing and she's just feeling Elliot up. She's like, I can feel your heart beating. Like right in front of this inspector who's just watching her because Sophie is like walking away to talk in her earpiece. And she's just like rubbing her hand up into Elliot's chest. And
don't mind me while I feel you up.
I can feel your heart beating. And she's like, yes, I'm alive.
Right?
But he looks so uncomfortable. So Parker is getting to the scarab. She notices and Brianna gives us some exposition that the only thing that they didn't embed into security wise into that the walls is the fire sprinklers because it would have messed up the plaster. So, and they are very sturdy fire sprinklers because Parker is going to climb up a column and then like monkey across. Or sloth across, I guess is the right.
Faster, but yes.
Much faster than a sloth. And she's got her balloon that she's stolen. And she uses the helium from the balloon and puts it into the case to overwhelm the sensor so she can get the scarab out. But then she's got the balloon in her mouth and she lets go to tell them that she's gotten the scarab, which seems like a rookie move. She just wanted to open the helium voice, honestly.
Yeah.
And that sets off the sensors where and wakes up everybody that the Mastermind has successfully put to sleep. Because he's talking about all the camera angles and the ISOs and the shutter speed. So they all run off and they're like, okay, just leave calm and confidently. And he's like, okay, calm and confident. And then he sprints out the door. But Parker gets away, they're all ready to head out, but Mastermind is picked up outside by Naveed, because he's like, good job, let's go. So they are tailing them back to this other location, to the warehouse, in the food truck, and they tell Mastermind to let Naveed know that when I see my lawyer and he's safe, then you'll get your scarab. And he's trying to like kill time so they can get Sophie there. But she shows up and Naveed is like, who are you? Like, you're not in the book. I don't know who you are. Right. She says, you know, you need a team to get something like this. And then we have like the big epiphany of the episode, because Mastermind says, you know, she says, I'm Sophie, I'm with him. And he's like, of course she's not in the book. She's my co-mastermind. She's my partner in crime. She's the most important person. And he's like, oh, he like turns to her, like guns are trained on him. And he's like, that's why. And it's great because she's also having this realization.
Right. Yeah.
We're on the job. You need to focus. And if he's like, I don't give a shit. Like, what are you talking about? Give me my scarab. And so she gives it to them. And, but she says, you know, it's kind of a shame because Liliana filled out the wrong form. Because Navid tells all the mercenaries to kill them anyways after he gets up. And she's like, yeah, you might not want to do that. And she brings up the wrong form, and Mastermind takes him a second. He's like, oh, because, you know, she insured it for much less than it should have been insured for.
Right.
We're like, oh yeah, you were talking about that earlier, but I was not paying attention because it's boring as hell. And he's like, the only reason she would have done that. And then he just like the most badass thing he's done in this whole show. He takes the scarab and chucks it at the ground and shatters. And then we have to explain to Navid, the only reason she would have done that is if she knew that it wasn't that valuable, because she sold it off already.
Right.
To fund her lifestyle.
Which is the classic woman sells off her jewels and replaces them with paste, to save face kind of trope.
Yeah. She says to like fund her lifestyle. And part of me also wonders if it's just to like thumb her nose at Navid, because he's a dick. Like, yeah, I'm going to sell this priceless artifact from your country, your home country, just for money, just so that I can continue to have nice things. I don't care. And Harry's like, yeah, it's probably scrap metal by now. And I'm like, who would pay $200 million or something and then turn it into scrap metal?
What? I don't know. It's probably an NFT, knowing this world that we live in.
Yeah. So he's like, whatever, like I'll find some other way to pay for this coup. And I don't care. And I've paid off all the local authorities, so it doesn't matter if we kill you, nobody's gonna do anything about it. And she's like, yeah, you've paid off the local authorities, but what about the international ones? And then we see her flashback to talking to the inspector, and she's like, oh, you're just the deputy inspector. I bet it would just take one big case for that promotion. So she's gotten a warrant out for him, and Interpol are on their way.
Right.
And Navid's like, fine, I'll get out of here. Just kill them. The mercs are like, pay us.
Right.
We know your money's not very good. And he's like, okay, fine. And they're like, give us the 10 million that you have, and we'll divvy it up amongst ourselves, and we'll kill him. We don't care. So he like pulls up his bank account, empty.
Of course it is.
Parker was like, look at this cute little Swiss bank account number. Oh. Delete. And they're like, delete. You better have taken that money.
Yeah. I'm not sure I've ever seen that in online banking. Just the option just to delete all your money.
It's a concept anyways.
Yeah.
Which is so great, and then kind of fades out because like they've taken all their guns off, you know, our people, and what's gonna happen to Navid. So
nothing good.
In fact, he immediately surrenders to Interpol, because it's that or be taken out by all of the mercenaries, which we find out once we're back in New Orleans. And we also find out that news of the Mastermind's special power, superpower, has gotten around to the other Leverage crews, and they all want him to come out. They're like, we totally can see the use of this. And okay, Parker is talking to somebody when she comes into the room, and she's like, he's booked, Alistair. Don't call me again unless you want to be visited by my dentist at 2 a.m., which is a great threat. like, am I supposed to know who Alistair is? Like, I couldn't.
I don't think so.
I'm like Aleister Crowley, which Crowley is the name of the actor who plays Sterling. Wow, I just forgot his name. His character in Supernatural, but that's not.
Yeah, that's a bit of a stretch.
But I was like, no, Aleister. So if that's got to be a reference to something, or hopefully that'll be someone who shows up later.
I think my guess is that it's
from another crew.
It's somebody from another crew, and it's not a name you run into in America very often. So it's sort of, it's a way of sort of shorthanding that's what she, she's talking to one of the international crew, but they also have to have a reason why she'd be speaking in English.
That's true. And also it's a Doctor Who reference.
Okay.
I swear there's somebody in the Doctor Who verse that's called Alistair. And
Alistair
Lethbridge Stewart. That's his first name. So
yes,
it's just a Doctor Who reference. That's why I knew the name. Okay.
There are many of those, yes.
Are. And I would feel very ashamed of myself if I missed one. I've probably missed a lot.
It's a big show. I mean, there were
50 years,
decades of episodes. Yeah,
50 years plus. So Sophie wants the mastermind. I love that at this point we still don't know his real name. Like, we've all just been calling him Mastermind. Yeah. No one, like, on the plane back was like, "So what's your name, man?"
Right.
Because she asks him to sign her book with his real name, and he does this lovely inscription that she reads out loud in front of him. And I don't know about you, but I hate it when people read what I've written out loud, like right in front of me.
Like, it doesn't bother me that much, but
I think, like, if I'd written something and then it stewed for a little bit, then I gave it to somebody like a critique partner, like, that doesn't bother me. But like when we used to sign things in yearbooks and then people would read it, I'm like, no, like, let me, that's supposed to be like when you're thinking back later, or you're looking
right.
At not for like consumption.
Not for right now.
Like, oh God, no. It just, the cringe, I can't handle it. But she's out loud, and it's so that we can hear it. But then we find out that his name is Milton Friedlander, which is great. And she tells him, because of you, I got to pull one last job with Nate Ward. And that's very sweet. And then they both take a sip of their whiskey. And I remember the first time I watched it going, that doesn't look like a man who drinks whiskey very much. And then he immediately like gagged.
Yeah.
Yeah, same man, same. And he's like, eh. She's like, no, you're just supposed to like toss it back. And he's like, it's hot. So
yeah.
Good. Okay. Another thing, I wanted to go back to talk about Elliot and his Frank Farmer scenario. it's been a long time since I saw The Bodyguard.
I have never seen it.
You've never seen it. Okay.
I've never seen it.
I wondered like if you had, because it's a little more like your generation than mine. But
yes, it's very much so. Yeah.
I was way too young to probably be watching The Bodyguard. But I saw somewhere else that someone was like, okay, it's referencing this. But then when I went back to do my research for this episode, I couldn't find it anywhere again. And so I had to Google Frank Farmer and it came up. But yeah, Kevin Costner's character in The Bodyguard with Whitney Houston. Right. And, you know, it's about a man. The storyline is he was a CIA agent, I think, and somebody that his detail that was protecting died or got hurt. And so he's got a lot of guilt. And then he gets hired to be this pop star's bodyguard because there's a bomb in her that goes off in her dressing room. So somebody's trying to get her. And so he's protecting her and they fall in love.
Right.
So I think he even quotes part of it, if I'm not wrong. I did not do any more research on that, but I think there might be some like direct quotes that he stole from The Bodyguard. And so I don't know if The Bodyguard, the movie, exists in the Leverage universe.
I think it probably does.
So then my headcanon is that Elliot has seen it so many times.
That he's just randomly sliding into it.
which I think would be amazing. And also he's clearly doing this to show off because it's really over the top, right?
Yeah.
And like in a almost cringy sort of way, but it's perfectly tailored. Like Liliana is primed for this.
Mm-hmm.
Buys it hook, line, and sinker. But also, even though he doesn't really acknowledge it again in the episode, it's to show Milton that, hey, I'm not just someone who beats people up. I also am a great grifter. You know, I can also act. I can also do all these other things.
Seductive grifter.
But then, exactly. But then Milton like never acknowledges that.
Right.
It's kind of pointless. And Elliot was just uncomfortable most of the time. Which I like that they showed that. Like, it wasn't like he was like, oh yeah, no, fine, I'll be sexy with this lady and I like that. He's visibly uncomfortable with the way that she treats him.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts?
No, I think most of my thoughts were sort of covered mostly in the beginning. It's just that the whole premise of, you know, being written out of a loved one's story quite literally was really, really interesting to me, and the various emotional reactions to that. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, all of the callbacks are always so much fun. And, you know, when we're sitting watching, you know, these things, and I'll be like, oh yeah, because that was episode one. My husband kind of looks at me, he's like, how?
You're like, because.
How do you remember that? I'm like, well, if it's episode one, season one, we've watched that episode probably 30 times. Because, you know, that I don't know if you even remember all the way back to that particular episode. That was, I believe, in the middle of the writer's strike. And so it was the only episode that was available for a long time. And it was basically released almost like as a teaser.
Yeah.
And we liked it so much from the jump that, you know, we had it on our TiVo and it was like, yeah, let's just watch that again.
We don't know if it's coming back, but I really like it. Let's watch it again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they did at the end of that episode. Well, I mean, they leave it open, but, you know, they always talk so much about the end of every season, not knowing if they're coming back.
Mm-hmm.
They don't leave it on big cliffhangers.
Right.
They leave, well, you know, a door open so they can keep going, but also they try to wrap everything up, and they sort of do that in the first episode. So even if it hadn't come back, you'd be like, oh, they are going off to do new adventures. We just don't get to see them.
We just don't get to see them. Yeah. I think that they always knew that there was going to be at least a season one. It was just that the production of it got delayed because of the writer's strike. So yeah, I have seen that episode approximately 37 times.
I have not seen it that many, but
I might be exaggerating slightly.
I'm going to say almost at least 10 times.
Yeah, easily.
It's so good.
More. Yeah, because one of the things that got me about that show is, and I think I've probably said this before, it's been a long time since I've been on your podcast, is that oftentimes it takes actors and writers a while to get in a groove in terms of who are these characters. You know, how do they speak? How do they, you know, who are they as people? And I don't think I've ever watched a pilot where I saw a more fully realized entire cast of characters and actors who knew who their characters were from the jump.
Yeah.
And I know I've said this before too, one of the things they also did was they all had very, very specific reactions to all of the different pairings. So like, you know, oftentimes, you know, if you've got a character like Parker, you know, she's nutty, whatever. And everybody kind of tends to treat that character in the same way because they're all kind of put off by it. And that's not the case at all. So we've got Nate knowing who Parker is and just kind of like rolling with it. We've got Elliot going, who is this nutty lady?
Yeah.
And then we've got Hardison, who from the get-go is like, oh, she's intriguing. And we've got Sophie kind of going, this is interesting, you know, kind of sees the underlying metal of her. And that mentor relationship almost started from that very first episode. So yeah, I mean, it's just good television.
It's just good television. Mm. And it continues to be good television.
Yeah.
Right. Hmm. But yeah, that's that amazing episode. Do you have a high slight or anything you'd like to share?
No, I can't think of anything.
I found a very random one that I don't have very much information on at all, but it came across my Twitter a couple of days ago and I bookmarked it. So this is a tweet from an editor at Holiday House, which is a publishing company. And it's so cute. Okay, so her name is Elizabeth Law and her Twitter handle is ELAW Reads. So Elaw Reads. And her bio is so cute. It says, children's books are my vocation, editor at Holiday House and for private clients. On my tombstone, that's not a soundtrack. It's a cast recording. I really like her. But she tweeted on the 5th, in the 80s, decades before supply chain issues were a thing, a truck was held up at gunpoint and driven away. The contents were never recovered. Inside the truck were 10,000 copies of a coffee table book and 35,000 copies of a Lift the Flap called Have You Seen My Easter Egg? So a Lift the Flap book is like a children's, like a board book where it has little flaps you can lift and be a little surprise under it. So, these were all bound for the Penguin Warehouse. We always wondered what the thieves must have thought when they saw their haul was 35,000 Lift the Flap books created for toddlers. Ironically, the cover showed a kitten knocking a toy truck over with its paw.
That is so random.
I was just like, that's such a great heist. Like, you're like, yeah, we got this truck. What's inside? 10,000 coffee table books.
Of a children's book. Yeah. Oh my God.
I wonder, ooh, because I was like, okay, that fits with this episode. But like, what if they knew full well what was in that crates, truck?
Right. Yeah.
There was something in the coffee table book or something hidden in the board that was like incriminating. And they're like, it can never make it to the warehouse.
Wow. Yeah.
It was a mastermind situation, but he'd already let it get printed, which I'm sure Penguin just reprinted all of those books. But
yes, Penguin got the insurance and reprinted the books and yeah.
I had one other thing, and a post came across my Tumblr, and I just liked it so much that I asked if I could share it, and now I probably won't be able to find it. So the Tumblr user is AJ-Lenoire, which is L-E-N-O-I-R-E, and they have a whole slideshow presentation, and it's called Leverage, According to Me. What up? I have a new hyperfixation. This time, I'm procrastinating actual professional work. And it just goes through and it like introduces you to leverage in a very adorable, really funny way. So like the slide on Nate is called Issues Daddy.
Fair.
AKA Nathan Ford, AKA The Brains. Tired Crime Dad. I'm not a thief. 3 seconds later, let's go steal a country. Decided not to become a priest because he instead wanted to go into insurance. Pretty sure it's supposed to be the other way around, but all right, you do you, buddy. They call Sophie Dominique, aka Sophie Devereaux, aka the Grifter. The look on the bride side, watch your tone, young man, crime mom. Style of the group. Seriously, this woman just oozes charisma. Casually brainwashes Elliot when he laughs about her not liking bugs. The Elliot one. I'm just reading highlights, so you guys. I will put the link to this in the show notes for this, or you can go look up this user because they have a lot of great stuff. The Elliot slide is called Bucky Barnes.
Oh dear.
AKA Elliot Hunter, AKA the hitter. Very much the eldest son of the group, would absolutely die for his little brother and sister, but they also drive him insane.
Yes.
They really want you to be curious about his mysterious past. So anytime someone asks what he was doing X years ago, it smash cuts to him getting waterboarded or some shit.
Accurate.
The Hardison one, the title is, He is Baby, Your Honor. AKA Alec Hardison, AKA the hacker. is the first to actually realize they've all speed run a found family, and he plays up the little shit middle child for all it's worth. A goddamn gentleman worthy of respect. Loves his Nana.
Yes.
Parker's title is Parkour. AKA Parker, AKA the thief. Might not be capable of fear. Might just not have that. Hashtag legends only. Socialized like a stray cat. Autism coded, but like, well, respectfully? What?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very much the baby sister of the group. Utter gremlin child. We love her. They have Tara. You're not my real mom. And then also,
yeah.
Occasionally, these guys, and it has Sterling and Maggie and Quinn and everybody else.
Golly.
And then it's just, it keeps going. There's a Venn diagram. It's so good. And the Venn diagram is feral, romantic, and horny. It's so good. Which I've seen that Venn diagram before. My favorite hockey podcast uses it to talk about hockey players. It's just brilliant. It's so good. So yeah, AJ Lenoir should go and follow them if you are a Tumblr person. Yeah, it's so wonderful.
This is going to be the longest episode you've
ever recorded. No, no, please, no. We're going to be under 2 hours. We got this. So, Adele, do you have anything you want to plug or tell people where to follow you online?
I have 3 books of a 4-book series that are out. It's called the Center Stage series, and they are available wherever you buy paper or ebooks. And the 4th one will be coming out by the end of the year. And they all have acting in the title. So it's acting up, method acting, acting lessons. And the last one is fast acting. And then also later this year, I will have a novella coming out, which I'm really excited about because, there was an anthology call that went out for, fake dating stories. And one of my all-time favorite rom-com movies is The Wedding Date with Deborah Messing and, Dermot Mulroney, where Deborah Messing, of course, as one does, is going to her sister's wedding in London, and her ex-boyfriend is going to be the best man, and she really needs somebody to support her and make her look like she's attractive to somebody else. So she hires Dermot Mulroney, who is an escort, to be her date for the week-long wedding shenanigans. And I said to myself, so what if it was basically that plot line? But instead of being the sister of the bride, what if it was the mother of the bride? And the guy who's going to be there is her ex-husband, who's a father of the bride, who's a feckless jerk. And I wrote
this. This is about to happen to one of my good friends, actually.
So I wrote this novella so fast. It was so much fun to write, and I have a cover waiting, and I'm just waiting to get edits back probably this week for my editor and, you know, do my final revisions. And then it's kind of going to go out into the world like a feral child whenever I have the opportunity to. So, but I'm just really kind of silly excited about this.
That sounds great. Does it have a name yet?
Yes. Because she is baiting her ex-husband with this lovely man, it's The Wedding Bait.
Aha! I love it. Little pun. I love it.
Yes. Yes. So. Awesome. And so that's me.
Great. And do you want people to follow you online?
Oh, sure. Sure. I am _ Adele Buck on Twitter and Instagram. And I'm sort of tipping my toes into TikTok, but I'm really not good at it yet. So, you know, don't feel bad about not following me because I don't know what I'm doing over there.
Okay. As always, I'm at @LibrariansD on Twitter, and you can find me there. And let's see, do I have it pulled up? Yes, I do. You won't see a special Here's Again in a week. When we talk about The Bucket Job, and that'll probably be Robin and Corey, my other 2 librarians, to talk about, spoiler alert, LeVar Burton
right?
It's just very
reading exciting. Rainbow as librarian. Yes.
Yes. As a like millennial baby, LeVar Burton was probably one of the like five reasons I became a librarian.
I can see that.
Big effect on my life. So yes, so I'll be back with some other millennials to talk about LeVar Burton. As you do. Okay, Adele, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Always fun.